Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Freshfields podcast. My name is Tom Snelling and I head our commercial disputes group in London. I'm joined today by two colleagues, Anne-Laure Vincent from Freshfields Paris and Ali Kirby-Harris from Freshfields London. We're now just a few days away from the 29th of March, and in another important week for Brexit votes in the UK Parliament, we're going to talk about an issue that's a particular concern to our clients. It's a question whether Brexit should change their approach to contracting, particularly in terms of choice of law and jurisdiction clauses, and around the recognition of judgments. There are a number of conventions or treaties to help ensure that choice of law and dispute resolution are respected. The ones you'll hear us talk about in this podcast are Rome 1 and Rome 2, which cover contractual and non-contractual obligations, Brussels Recast, which is state-of-the-art in respecting the party's choice of dispute resolution, Lugano, which applies between the EU member states, Iceland, Norway and Switzerland, and Hague Choice of Court, which is not as sophisticated as either Lugano or Brussels Recast. And part of the challenge with Hague is that it applies only to exclusive jurisdiction clauses. So let's start with how things stand today between the EU member states. Then we can turn to explore the ways in which things might change. Ali, what are your thoughts?
So as things stand, within the European member states, they respect the party's choice of law. They respect the party's choice of the court that should deal with the disputes. And member state courts enforce each other's judgments relatively easily. I do think it's worth pausing at that point just to reflect on what we see in our practice, which is that sometimes it is very straightforward to recognise judgments from the English courts within the EU. And sometimes it is a little bit more challenging. So I have worked on cases where enforcing English judgments is a matter of simply filing a few translations with a foreign court and it happens seamlessly. But there we have also come across cases, for example, in Cyprus, where we have had to have hearings before judges. It's taken time and money, frankly, and has actually been a much more complex process than one might imagine from simply reading the Brussels Recast regulation.
One of the risk with Brexit is it pushes people to extreme propositions. It would be wrong to say that Brussels Recast is absolutely perfect in practice. It'd equally be wrong to say that anything other than Brussels Recast will not work. So let's turn to the question of what we think might change in practice. Anne-Laure, do you have thoughts from a French perspective?
Well, for governing law, no real change are expected. Indeed, the applicable instruments that we have right now, namely Rome 1 and Rome 2, already respect the choice of the parties as far as the governing law is concerned, even if this law isn't of a member state. And even in a no-deal scenario, French court would continue to recognize the choice of English law, even if it becomes a third state.
And we think that's exactly the same here. The English courts, after Brexit, even if it's a no deal, should continue to respect the party's choice of law. And so actually choosing English law is the same decision that you would make post-Brexit as before. And so when we then look at choice of jurisdiction, again, we think that the courts will continue to respect these clauses where there is an exclusive jurisdiction clause in favour of the English courts. And that is obviously important because if you are in dispute with your contractual counterparty, you want to have certainty about precisely where the dispute is going to be considered.
Okay. Let's turn to the question that people are mainly asking about. What will happen after Brexit to the enforcement of judgments between the UK and the EU27?
I mean, that is where the position is more uncertain. And certainly if there is no deal after Brexit, and if there were no other agreements or treaties in place, then local law in each of the member states will govern how an English judgment is enforced.
On this, Ali, we did an interesting survey with our European colleagues to know how would their court respond in such a situation. And generally, they confirmed that the court would continue to respect the judgment from third states, especially, as you said, in case of exclusive jurisdiction clauses. And that would also be the case in France. And even if the outcome of the proceedings for the recognition and enforcement of the judgment of a third state would probably remain the same, it will, however, take a little bit longer. For example, in France, we would have to initiate entirely new proceedings, which last no less than a year.
I also wonder whether there's a sense in which we will see the competition between courts in different jurisdictions increase as a result of Brexit? Does it provide opportunities, do you think, for example, to the courts in Paris?
Yeah, of course, and that's a fair competition. It's not Brexit related, but France is currently promoting the international chambers that have been created within the Paris Commercial Court and the Paris Court of Appeal, in front of which the proceedings might be held in English. For example, the parties, the witnesses, and the experts might be heard in English. The documentary evidence might be produced in English also, and all judges are Anglophones. And they would, of course, very easily respect the choice of English law.
And it's not just France. We know from other colleagues who work for Freshfields in the Netherlands and Germany and other jurisdictions within the EU that they also have courts who are interested in affirming their ability to deal with disputes in the English language and potentially also under English law. The English courts, I don't think, are complacent about this. There's been competition for some time as to which courts will resolve disputes between parties. And one of the ways in which the English courts in London have dealt with this is to be innovative. They've listened to the users of the court system and they've changed their procedural rules to make sure, for example, obligations around disclosure of documents are more cost and time effective. And that's exactly what they're going to need to continue to do if they're to remain as attractive as possible for parties who are choosing between now a number of different jurisdictions with high-quality dispute resolution fora.
Parties have chosen the English courts for years to determine disputes for reasons that are totally unaffected by the referendum result, such as the high calibre of our judiciary, the availability of specialist courts here in London, such as the business and property courts, which comprise the commercial court and the technology and construction court. We have specialist judges with expertise and backgrounds which lend themselves to deciding these highly complex cases. And frankly, that is why people come to London so often to determine their commercial disputes.
We heard in France that the UK has applied to join the Choice of Court Convention of Hague. Is that correct?
This is part of the no-deal planning, if you like. The preference, I think, for UK PLC would be something equivalent to Brussels recast. But that's only realistic if there's a deal Brexit. In a no-deal context, there'll need to be something in place, and the UK has therefore applied to join Hague Choice of Court Convention in its own name. It's currently part of it as a result of being an EU member state. Those papers were filed in December. On the 1st of April, the Hague Convention will come into force in respect of the UK. We would leave on the 29th of March, but you can't join Hague until the 1st of the month, the 1st of April. So there's a question mark as to whether, if you have contracts entered into during the course of that weekend, you could benefit from Hague. And you should definitely be speaking to someone and taking advice about that if that looks likely.
Or if possible, waiting until the 1st of April to conclude your contract.
Exactly. And the other challenge of Hague, of course, is it applies to exclusive jurisdiction contracts, but not non-exclusive ones. It's another point that contracting parties need to be really careful about.
There's also the Lugano Convention, which is quite similar to the Brussels recast. The EU, Norway, Switzerland and Iceland are a party to the Lugano Convention. And so again, the UK will leave the Lugano Convention on Brexit and have to rejoin. The UK government has indicated that it will apply to rejoin Lugano immediately on Brexit, but the process isn't quick. And in particular, all of the other members have to agree that the UK will become part of Lugano.
This reflects, Ali, I think, that there's quite a lot of uncertainty about, in addition to Hague, will there be Lugano and will we get anything as good as Brussels recast? But there's some comfort we can draw from the fact that the UK Ministry of Justice and the senior judiciary here in the UK are treating these issues as a top priority.
But Tom, it's not only a matter of importance for the UK, because we also have to keep in mind that we will have judgments coming the other way, EU 27 judgments that will need to be enforced against assets located in the UK. So what will happen? Because clients are also wondering about that.
We know the importance of being able to have recognised and enforced in England and Wales those judgments from the rest of the EU. It happened 160 times in 2018. And so there's a real two-way traffic issue here, which ultimately gives me some hope that a answer can be found that's in the interest not just of the UK, but also the EU 27.
And otherwise, if there is no deal, then after we have acceded to the Hague and Lugano conventions, then at least they will apply to the disputes and enforcement.
In addition of that, we also have to consider arbitration, of course, which will be unaffected by Brexit as it was never linked directly to membership of the EU. As we all know, arbitral awards are enforceable all around the world under the New York Convention, which has been signed by more than 150 signatory states, including, of course, the UK and all the EU member states. So the parties who are concerned about enforcing an English court judgment after Brexit should really consider arbitration as a robust solution for dispute resolution.
Okay, so bring that all together. What's our advice for the people listening to this podcast to what they should do?
Well, I think firstly, in terms of choice of law, the position is unlikely to change a lot. And so choose English law if you would have chosen English law anyway, regardless of Brexit. Similarly, in terms of jurisdiction clauses, exclusive jurisdiction clauses are preferable and give a greater certainty. So opt for those if possible.
It's not just English law, which I think will continue to be popular. I think there are many reasons why the UK courts will continue to be exceptionally popular with clients and will remain the right forum to have their disputes resolved. For a number of parties, the place where they're likely to have enforcement steps taken is outside the EU27, and there may be good reasons why they should do nothing different from their existing position in terms of choosing the English courts.
Of course, and London seat arbitration won't be affected by Brexit, so it remains a serious option offering predictability to clients.
So ultimately, there's a period of uncertainty here. There are questions to be answered, but there are options and choices for clients to think about. And when facing the challenge of weighing up those options, we would, of course, be happy to help. And for those who are considering these issues, there's lots of information and guidance from us on the Brexit aspect of our website. Ali, Alour, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, both.
Thank you.